Welcome to Hope's Garden and the Bridegroom Speaks podcast with Laura Ercolino.
Welcome, everybody, to our July at His Feet workshop. And the title of our workshop tonight is Healing and Spiritual Direction. And our guests are two of our very own. We have Father Michael Stala and we have Laura Ercolino. So obviously, you all know that Laura is the founder of Hope's Garden. And I think most of you have had personal interactions with her. And Father, you've probably seen in the biweekly spiritual reflection videos that he records for us. So tonight we'll get to spend time listening to Laura and Father talk about Laura's journey, her healing journey with Father in spiritual direction.
So today we wanted to talk to you a little bit about the difference between spiritual direction and counseling, coaching, the different things that happen. So one of the things that I noticed about when I was working with Laura in particular, that she had, we called it the dream team. There were a number of different people involved, including counselors, doctors, and I did the role of spiritual direction. When somebody is dealing with a great deal of trauma or difficulties, that is a really great idea to be working together. And I remember when I was in the missions, I was real good friends with a local doctor, and it was kind of hard in the missions to find a peer. So this was my peer, the doctor. He used to crush me at basketball. He was really good. So the doctor used to give these wonderful speeches to everybody when we would do some sort of health clinic. And he would say, now remember, if your body is sick, you need to come to the doctor. But if the soul is sick, you need to go to Father. We work together, body and soul, to take care of you. I always loved that image that he would use. We were a team and we were helping people together. So I never think of it as a competition between a therapist or spiritual direction or a coach. Each person has their specific role and their expertise. And they really shouldn't be in each other's lane. They shouldn't be overlapping in such a way that they're giving contradictory information. In order to do that, we have to understand a little bit clearly what to expect from a spiritual director as opposed to a counselor. Now, one of the things that Laura would talk to the counselor about was the past, a lot about where she was coming from, what were the root causes, a lot of the suffering you were going through. Where I would really focus on, where are you today in your relationship to Jesus? And where were you gonna go with Jesus? So I always kind of brought Jesus into the center of the conversation. But it just so happened that her counselor also was a Catholic. So she was able to pray with her and kind of work with the imagery of our faith.
Yeah, actually, all three members of my dream team were Catholic. Jesus had definitely hand-selected ahead of time the three members of my team that he was going to send me to. And it was interesting because, like Father was saying, how they each had their role to play and they had to stay in their lane. And they didn't know each other. They didn't meet until after the divorce was done and after Jesus had come on that Valentine's Day and healed me. And then I introduced them to one another. And it was shortly after they were introduced to one another that Father had asked me to start like thinking about this process that the Lord had took me through, this what had happened in the last 3 years, this healing journey I had been on. And I made these big charts. And one of them was, you know, my spiritual healing with Father Michael, spiritual direction. My psychological, emotional, and mental healing with my therapist, and then my physical healing with my pelvic floor therapist. And as I stood there in front of these charts and started putting on each one, okay, here's something that Father Michael, like, here's a theme of what was in my spiritual healing, and here's a theme that was in my therapy, and a theme that was in my physical therapy. And when I was done and I stepped back, I saw that on each of the posters were seven same themes. They were all teaching me the same skills, one being to be in the present moment. Janine was teaching me how to be in the present moment in my body, how to accept what was happening in my body and how to self-soothe. And Linda was teaching me how to fight the PTSD symptoms by bringing myself back to the present moment using grounding skills and visualizations. And Father was teaching me to be in the present moment with Jesus. But they were all teaching me how to be in the present moment. And so what we saw from these three charts was truly an integration, that the healing was Jesus reintegrating me, mind, heart, body, and soul. And it was really, that was that was amazing to step back and actually see it on the wall in black and white, that this is what he had done. It was the process of reintegration.
Now I could see that sometimes you might have a dream team that somehow collides because of faith. You know, not all doctors, not all therapists are Christian. They don't all have the same faith level. And I would say that perhaps even a spiritual doctor might be a little bit anti-medicine or something like that. So you really want to pick the people that are going to be part of your healing that really get you, that understand that faith is a big part of your experience in life, and that you want Jesus to be involved in this. You know, I sometimes people say, I just want Jesus to make it all go away. I want Jesus to just heal me right away. Don't we all? I mean, that would be great. We ask him for that. We say, hey, we're open for a miracle. Let's have this happen. But that's not always the way that Jesus chooses. So we see this in the scripture. There was a blind man, and Jesus said, open your eyes and see. And his eyes opened instantaneously. With another one, he made a little bit of mud with his spittle, and then he put it on the guy's eyes, and he washed his eyes, and then he was still kind of blurry. And then he washed them again, and they could finally see. So that second one, what's the elements of the earth? It's the same thing we make medicine out of. It's just stuff in the earth. And it was done over a process, several times of cleansing. So he's basically saying, hey, if I feel like healing you through medicine, through the therapist, let me do it the way I want to do it. So we can't tell God, there's one way to do this, and you better do it the way I expected it. Instead, we all kind of work together and say, we're all open to using the gifts he has given us, the expertise we have developed, and we're working together for the benefit of the person who is struggling, whatever you're going through. And we want to be together, united, not to say all of us have to do the same thing, but all of us brings our expertise without demanding that God does it a different way. Just let God do it the way he's prepared for you. Another thing that I was thinking about as we were talking about this issue, in spiritual direction, my first question all the time in spiritual direction is, so how's your prayer life? That's where we want to start. And I find that for a lot of people, especially in situations where they've had trauma, they talk about it as if they were just kind of arguing with God. They were arguing that God, you know, I'm going through this difficulty and this difficulty and this difficulty, and I just tell God, why don't you make it all go away, and why isn't God listening? And that's a very common way to deal with a lot of pain and suffering. So then, of course, the deeper we get into it, we realize they didn't pray that. They assumed that. And so that was something we worked on together, is who are you talking to when you're doing this kind of complaining? Now, I want to tell you that it's okay to complain to God. We were just talking about this before we started up the video. Complaining to God is part of a prayer life. In fact, I do it. I just did it this week. I was really, God, you're giving me too much to do. Hello, I'm only one person. So, you know, we all do it. We all complain. But the difference is sometimes people don't take it to God. So I noticed this about Laura. She was complaining with the thoughts that ruminated in her mind. She complained to herself. And I used to tell her, don't talk to yourself. What are you doing? Talk to Jesus. I suppose you have to come to know who Jesus is so that you know how to communicate to him. But when you communicate to him, you can be yourself. And if right now you're in a grouchy mood, then bring it to the Lord. He can handle it. Don't bring it just to yourself. Don't just sit there with your thoughts inside yourself. So a lot of times we do that complaining almost like, when I get a chance to talk to Jesus, I'll bring him this bunch of junk that I'm upset about. Instead, I just say, talk to him right now. Right now, bring it to him. And he'll begin to bring the comfort that you're looking for instead of talking to yourself in the midst of it.
Yeah, that was really important advice. And it was more than one time. I mean, I think that was a theme for a long time in spiritual direction, was becoming aware of who I was speaking to and learning to discern the different voices that I was hearing in my own mind and my own heart. And, you know, for me, like a lot of us who have had trauma or been in abusive relationships, especially if there's narcissism involved, we adapt. We start to hear our own voice as the voice of the abuser. We start speaking to ourselves the way that they have spoken to us. And the same with childhood abuse. If it was our parents speaking to us that way, we assume that voice and speak to ourselves that way. And I began, as Father began to teach me, to discern the voices and to stop talking to myself, which meant that instead of even not just like complaining, but, you know, often even if there was a problem in front of me, I would start trying to figure that problem out on my own, in my own thoughts. Well, how am I going to do this? I can't do this. I don't know the answer. And what if I do this and that isn't right? On and on and on. And what he taught me was, instead of doing all of that useless spiraling thinking, just talk to Jesus right from the start. Jesus, how are we going to handle this problem? Jesus, I can't handle this problem alone. I need you. Please bring me, I don't know what to do. So bring me the people who do. Bring me someone to show me the way, enlighten me, help me. But always just taking it right to Jesus. And I still don't do it all the time. it is a process. but often then I kick myself later. I'm like, now why didn't I just, he had the answer the whole time. Why didn't I go to him, you know, 20 minutes ago or 2 days ago, instead of just remembering now, oh, I've been talking to myself again. I've been trying to figure it out on my own. And then I also noticed that I was hearing the voices of the ones who had abused me. And sometimes even the enemy took on their voices and would say the things that they had said to me. And so not only was I talking to myself sometimes, but I was actually talking to the enemy. And I don't want to do that. I made a decision. I wasn't doing that anymore. So I really put into practice, and my therapist helped too, really to learn, to be able to, with the therapist, it was, she called it cognitive behavioral therapy. Okay, what's that thought that's leading you down that spiral back into depression or anxiety? I'm not good enough. I can't do such and such. Okay, well, that's not the voice of Jesus. That's not the voice of Jesus. So let's change that thought. And one of the ways, like Father was talking about being safe with Jesus and learning that he can handle our bad moods and handle our anger, that was another place that was so freeing to me when I came to realize that, because the people in my life had not been safe. It wasn't safe to ever say to some of the people in my life, I don't want to do it your way. Or I'm really unhappy about having to do this, or I'm tired wasn't even safe sometimes, right? So learning that with Jesus, it was safe to say, you know what? I don't really want to be in this pain anymore. I stopped saying I can't, because I realized that with him, I can. He'll give me the strength. His grace is sufficient. So I really worked hard at not saying I can't do this, Jesus, but instead saying I can't do this without you, or I don't want to do this. This is really hard. I'm really tired. And if there's another way, like we were just talking about Jesus in the agony in the garden, if there's another way that we can accomplish your will, please show me the other way. But if this is the way, then I need you to do it with me. I need you to be the strength right here inside of me. I used to tell him all the time, I don't even have the strength to ask you for strength. You just need to be here. Like when I need strength, you need to already be here. You need to anticipate my need for that strength, because I'm too tired to remember to even ask for it.
And I think when we talk to God on that kind of openness, we sometimes feel afraid to reveal ourselves. And as Laura was pointing out, it's because there's people in her life that she wasn't safe with. And we project that onto God. We say like, well, God must be like the other people. And he's not. God is just different than all these other people. But we don't know that. It's something you have to come to know God. And as you enter into a relationship with God and get to know him, you'll find that freedom there. One of the key words that I'm always looking for is, I should be. When I hear that phrase, I should be, or I shouldn't be like this, I realize that you're talking to somebody else. You're not talking to Jesus. You're kind of saying, this is the person I am. This is the person I want to be. And in order to have that relationship with God, I should be like this idealized person that everybody told me I'm supposed to be like. And we have to kind of let that go. So those are those key words. I should be, or I shouldn't be X, Y, Z, whatever that might be. So if you say, oh, I should be more patient. Oh, I shouldn't complain. Whenever I hear that, what you're doing is you're limiting your prayer. You're telling God, I have something I want to talk to you about, but I won't, because the better version of me wouldn't do that. There is no better version of you. There's only you. And so to be able to say, sometimes I feel like a little child and I want to stamp my feet. You're allowed to do that. Stomp your feet all you want. And you can tell God these things. You're like, oh gosh, if I did that in front of other people, I'd feel so embarrassed. But you don't have to be embarrassed with God. Adam and Eve tried to hide from God after the original sin. I mean, how silly is that? It's God. Where are you going to hide? And yet God in his gentleness, Adam, Eve, where are you? He's just so gentle. He knows that we're just children. And even though we've grown up, in God's eyes, you know, there's an innocence to you. He actually appreciates it when you come to him childlike, not childish, but childlike, where we can just really be so transparent, where you can really show him. Because what you're doing is not diminishing his glory by treating him with disrespect. What you're doing is you're trying to show him your wounds as they really are. And don't clean it up. Don't clean it up so it looks real nice and then put all this makeup around it so it looks great and then present it to the physician. He wants to see you as you really are. Admit to the Lord where you are right now and let him enter into the wound so that he can bring it healing. Otherwise, you got this imaginary version of yourself that you hold up to him and say, just look at my mask. Don't look at me. Look at my mask. We can't heal a mask. He can only heal you. And you're not fooling anyone. He knows who you are even beforehand. But he needs you in his gentleness to open up, be transparent, and show him your real self. He'll never demand it from you. He'll never pull it from you. He'll never force it. He's waiting for when you're ready to let him in.
And I think when you said before about, you know, we feel like we have to be this better version of ourselves before we can present ourselves to God. And I was thinking, you know, really, it's only in presenting who we are today that we can become that better version, because it's God who will make us that better version of ourselves. And so if we're not praying honestly, if we're not lifting the veil and showing him the true woundedness in us, our brokenness, those weak places in us, then he can't make us stronger. He can't make us new in those places. So we have to, I mean, that was learning that I could be completely transparent and honest with God was tremendously healing. And when Father and I were talking before we signed on to Zoom, I told him, I used to feel bad because I don't even know how many times during these few years he had to text me or tell me or email me the phrase, you are safe with Jesus. You are safe with Jesus. I needed to hear it repeatedly. I had been so unsafe for so long and projecting that onto my relationship with Jesus that I had to be reminded over and over again. And I'm just so thankful that you were so patient and just kept reminding me that we're safe with Jesus.
And you are. You are perfectly safe with Jesus. You've come to know that. You've opened yourself up to that. And now you give that witness that you are safe with Jesus, that no matter where you were at. You know, one of the things that was difficult for Laura to admit for a long time was her anger at God. Because, you know, I mean, who am I to get angry at God? He's God Almighty. How could I express I'm angry at God? And it was to the point that she actually had denial. I'm not angry at God. All these bad things are happening in my life. All this trauma, all this pain. I'm not angry at God. And I just kind of took her word for it. Okay, I guess you're not angry. And I just had to wait until something surfaced. And with the dream team, some of the other members started to bring out some of that and bring her to the place where she could start to realize, I actually do have some angers. I got some issues with God. And then she brought it to me as a place in which we can now open that wound up to God. So one of the ways we did that was when she realized there were times in her life that it just seemed cruel that God did not save her from that moment. Where were you, God, when these bad things happened? That is so biblical. God, where are you? Where are you? Have you abandoned me? And today I might be in a relatively safe place, but back then when I needed you, where were you? And that was like a source of anger that she had never really taken to the Lord. So now that we had something to talk about, now we came up with a method to now find the healing. I don't know if you want to tell them about that.
So I'm going to jump back a teeny bit to how I got in touch with that anger. And a lot of that happened in therapy. And a lot of it started to happen once I started doing EMDR. And that started really bringing up memories that I had even, I never know if the right word is suppressed or repressed, but I wasn't remembering them consciously and didn't want to think about them. But EMDR started bringing all of this up. And for a while, even in therapy, I went into denial. I would even say, EMDR is just making me make things up. And she said, no, there is absolutely no scientific evidence that EMDR does that. These are your memories. This is real. And I kept saying, no, it couldn't have been that bad. No. Kept denying it. And then finally, I got to the point where I couldn't, like, it became so real. I knew it was real. And things that I was going through then in the present, in the trauma of the divorce, were showing me, yes, this is real. Yes, this is how he treats you. These are the things that he does. This is real. And so I couldn't deny it anymore. And my first response was to try and, again, suppress any anger. I thought that being angry was sinful. And so Father had to teach me that anger is not sinful. It's what we do when we're angry that can lead to sin or be a sin. But the anger itself is a God-given emotion. All of our emotions are from God. He created us, and none of them is bad. There's no bad emotion. And so that was helpful. And then in therapy, I started using the art. And I also, Linda had kept a stuffed snake in her office for me. And when she wanted me to really get in touch with the anger, she put the snake on the ground between us. And she said, look at that snake. Tell that snake how he's hurt you, what he's done to you. And that really, it started to open up. Her office was a safe place for me to open up. And then I'd bring it to Father and we would talk about, well, one, that I was safe with God, that God could handle my anger. And that unlike the people in my life, that telling Jesus I was angry was going to do nothing but elicit compassion from him and some sort of patient response. I didn't have to worry that he was somehow going to strike me down because I said I was angry with him, right? And I can actually remember, I don't even know if I've shared this with you, but I can remember the first time that I told Jesus that I was angry that he hadn't protected me all these years. And I actually had to get in the shower because I'm a single mom now with all of my kids. And so when I needed to cry or yell, I'd either drive to the Giant Eagle parking lot at night, or I would get in my shower and I had three doors between the hallway and my shower. And I would shut all the doors, turn the fan on and turn music on, and then get in the shower. And I would yell and scream and do whatever I needed to do in the shower. And so I was actually in the shower and I just literally collapsed to the floor and I just started sobbing. And I told Jesus, I am angry with you. I don't know where you were. I don't understand. You say that you will protect us from even stubbing our toe on a rock. So where have you been all this time? Why did you not protect me from all of this? And it was cathartic and it was healing. And after I had done it once, then it became easier to do it again. And it didn't last for long, actually. Like the getting angry phase didn't last for long because it was once I had given myself the freedom and really believed that I was safe with Jesus to express what I was angry about. I don't know. I guess he just healed it, took it. He took it from me. He received it. That's what happened. He received my anger and he took it to the foot of the cross and it was just gone. It was gone. And Father and I worked on sanctifying those memories that were coming up in EMDR that were leading to the anger, that by asking Jesus, where were you? He began to show me where he was, that he was truly there. It was very humbling in one experience when I asked him, where were you in this very frightening moment? And he actually responded with, I did save your life. It could have been worse. And that gave me a whole new perspective on just on life that we don't know. We don't know what might happen if it wasn't for his angels and for his protection around us.
Laura used to bring some of the pictures that she was now drawing from her therapy and show me what she was drawing. And the reason she did that was it was telling a story. It was telling the things that she was discovering, her memories and the way she was seeing it. And of course, there would be darkness, there would be vulnerability, and she would describe it to me and explain it to me. And it was very helpful for her to make it something concrete. And as this went on, the artwork became more and more joyful and free and pure and beautiful. It was a really good method. The fact that she could share it with me allowed me to hear where she was going in her counseling, apart from what I was doing. But then I could also see that as being an opportunity for us to talk about prayer within painting, within the memory. And that's where sanctifying memories came from. She would have a vision, almost like a camera was watching a traumatic event. And she'd say, Jesus, you're not in this picture. You're not here. And I remember she called me one night. She even said, I got this image stuck in my head and I'm so frustrated and fearful and traumatized by this. I can't seem to find him anywhere in this image. So just imagine the television screen is filled with the horror, the terror. And I said, well, look for Jesus, look for him. She says, I don't see him. And I said, well, turn your head. And she said she physically turned her head and she could see almost like behind the camera. There was Jesus weeping, feeling everything she was feeling, experiencing this and crying out, stop. And allowing Jesus to be in that moment and experiencing it, not from the heavens far away, but like right there. And it changed the way the prayer sounds. God, you weren't there. You don't know what it's like. Why didn't you do anything? And you could see he really was there. He was feeling it. And it is complicated. I know it's not always satisfying to hear that God knows best and God's got a plan. But here, at least we understood he was experiencing this with you. He never wanted you to be hurt. He was crying out from the heavens that the abuser would stop. And so it was really a revelation there. Now, you might say, well, God could have stopped. I don't know how to answer that exactly. It's something that I'd have to say God didn't reveal to me what he did. But the very fact that he revealed that he was present was very healing for Laura. What he could have done or could not have done, he didn't tell me. And I have to be humble enough to say, I don't totally get it all the time. I don't. He didn't explain that to me. This is not an exact science. But I saw the results, which made me know that it was the Holy Spirit. Something happened with Laura, that defense mechanism just started melting away.
I think one of the things that happened was I started to truly know, truly know and believe in my heart of hearts that I was safe with Jesus, that he had never abandoned me. And if he had been with me through all of that, if he was healing me from all of that, he never was going to abandon me, never is. And that there's nothing that he won't get me through. Even though we were still stuck in this traumatic divorce, it began to really give me hope that we were going to come to the end of this and it was going to be okay. It was going to be okay, that he was with us now, just like he always had been. And that trust that he was going to work it all for good.
For more resources and our consecration to Christ the Bridegroom, visit hopesgarden.com, the sanctuary where the spousal love of Christ the Bridegroom heals hearts, marriages, and families. You may also want to join our community powered by Mighty Networks. Download the Mighty Networks app and find us at Hope's Garden.